You're listening to Movie Sucktastic.
Go ahead. Scare me.
Sounds like some bad movie.
That's what we do around here.
Bad movies.
After midnight, we gonna let it all hang out. Sorry.
Can't help it. You just can't help it.
Stuck in my head. I know. Stuck in my head all week. Yes. Welcome to Movie Sucktastic. I'm Scott, that's Joey, and this week we're reviewing After Midnight.
After Midnight, a little anthology film from the 80s.
Yes, late 80s, 1989 to be precise.
Yep.
Now, this was this film, After Midnight, was written and directed by Jim and Ken Wheat, the Wheat Brothers.
Oh, yeah, the Brothers Wheat.
Yes, yes. So that, they were involved with Nightmare on Elm Street 4 they were involved in, and obviously Pitch Black. They were also the writers on originally.
Did they do the Nightmare on Elm Street TV series as well?
I don't know.
Were they involved in that at all?
I don't know. I'm taking a quick peek and I don't think so. Just on Dream Master.
Oh,
they also wrote Ewoks: The Battle for Endor.
Of course they did.
You know, there's that, but like the Fly 2, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, they were getting.
Oh, they wrote the screenplay for the Fly 2, huh?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, I'm looking at their.
Well, those are more collaborations. This was a big deal for them. This was a film that they wrote themselves and directed themselves. So for a little background on the creative origins of the film,
Now it says here that they wrote the screenplay for Apt Pupil.
For what?
They wrote the screenplay for Apt Pupil, but,
oh, okay.
But the thing is, what I'm looking at here is, not the movie from 1998.
Oh.
So did they help write the short story with... It says director Alan Bridges. I mean, I don't... Hold on.
I don't know. You're getting bogged down in a different film there, sir.
I must be.
Back it up.
No. It's a Stephen King Apt Pupil. I just don't know how it's connected. It's very weird. Okay. I don't know why.
So, the Wheat Brothers did confess that this film was inspired by, technically it's a remake of, I feel, of the 1946, where are my notes? I think 1946 film, Dead of Night, which is an anthology, a classic anthology horror film, and probably one of the most well-regarded.
Really?
As cinematic. Yeah, yeah. Have you ever seen it?
No, I've never seen it.
It's good.
I feel like I've heard of it though. Then again, the word dead, the word night, it's used a lot in thrillers and horror movies. So
yeah, 1946. Yeah, that now that anthology all the short sequences within the anthology were based on previously published short stories. With After Midnight, this is all original material. Not that original in quotes.
Sure. I mean...
Yeah.
I'm sure it was, you know, something borrowed, something inspired. You know, it always seems the way. You know, the teacher, the guy that teaches the class?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's only because I'm watching this now and not in the 80s when I saw it. But I'm getting strong Mark Strong vibes from this guy. You know who Mark Strong is? Yeah. The actor Mark Strong? Mark Strong, no. He played, what's-his-face in the first Sherlock Holmes, the bad guy in the first Sherlock Holmes movie with Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law. He's been in a million things. He's been in a million things. If you saw his face, you know exactly who he was. He looks just like this guy here. I mean, like, being young. And even kind of sounds like him a little bit, too. It's just weird watching this movie 37 years later, 36 years later. And it's getting a vibe for this other actor that I see in a ton of movies, you know, modern day.
Right. Now, you're talking about the professor character who's from the first story, which is the wraparound story.
Correct.
Which is Allison's story, or as I would like to call it, story time at creepy teacher's house.
Yeah, he brings a gun in class because he's teaching them the psychology of fear. He points it at a student's head, and he doesn't get fired. He gets a warning.
Well, if you're tenure, you're going to get a warning.
I don't know about that.
What? So faking your own suicide to get a reaction from your class is a bad thing? Come on.
I mean, that's strike two.
Yeah.
I'm just saying things were different in the 80s.
Very, very moody lighting in this film. Apart from the opening sequence when we meet our wraparound host, Allison, who is concerned about this new fear class. I mean, who wouldn't be? It's a fear class. But doesn't really let on why, just that she has a bad feeling. And the original film that this, actually, I'm not going to go into the original because that's distracting from this. So the whole story follows this class of fear mongers who follow the professor to his home because he says, well, the faculty said I can't, you know, scare the living shit out of you here, so you want to come to my house at night. And the student said yes.
Earlier in class, pointing a gun at a student, then faking his own suicide in class, you would think people would just run.
Even without that, the teacher asking if the kids want to come back to this, to my house later tonight. No. True. No, I think this... Yeah, back then, I guess it was just a thing. Yeah, you trust your professors. I don't think so. But so that's the whole setup for the anthology tool or segment of the portion of the film. As they gather at the creepy professor's house, he tells them to tell each other scary stories.
Right, right. And as they tell these stories, it fades to a reenactment of it or... You know, the movie portion of the anthology, which I will say this, for an average thriller slash horror film, I thought it was, I liked the way it was filmed. I thought it was actually pretty decent in a lot of spots, especially that first story when they're driving past the house, like the way the camera shot was moving with the vehicle and it was moving with the house. And then, of course, when they get out of the vehicle and... They spend money on a crane shot because it was like way up high and it came right down ground level. Because back then, it's not like now. Now you can film that with a drone or, you know, other ways much cheaper than getting a crane. Back then, you had to have a crane. You know, it was considered the expensive crane shot. And that first story had one of those shots and it just was really well done. I was surprised for such a, you know, a little average film that some of the storytelling and the cinematography slash filmmaking was actually above average. I thought that was pretty neat.
They had a very experienced cinematographer. Yes. Somebody who knew their job. Definitely. It's a well-made film, but it's lacking something.
Oh, absolutely lacking. I mean, no, because there wasn't one time where I'm watching this and I'm just like, like I am really enjoying this. I know it's a bad film, but you know, it's one of those, you know, so bad it's good kind of deals. And no, this isn't one of those. This is just not good.
Well, I think a problem with it is all the segments, the three scary stories that are told between the students are the old dark house where Jimmy Olsen fucks up.
Jimmy Olsen. what's his face? What was his name in Back to the Future? His last name was McFly. He was the older brother in that as well.
Mm. But I like to think of that first segment with him as what happened to Jimmy Olsen later in life.
It's one of those
segments with the flimsy plot where okay, I'm gonna scare my husband on his birthday because that's fun. So the first thing they do is they put tacks all over a public road.
Yeah,
and just to shred two of his good tires.
Like, tires are really cheap. No, they're not. It's like, happy birthday. Yeah. You fucked up two of my tires that I now have to get repaired or replaced. What the fuck?
It has the second best ending out of the three, though. So I'll give it the ending. Yeah. But like most of these segments, the problem is there's three segments. They should have gone for like four and cut them down shorter. It would have worked. The original Dead of Night is actually four or five short segments with a wraparound.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're much shorter and to the point where like it's a setup and then a reveal. This goes through that whole, okay, we have to have a slow build-up. But then the slow build-up takes so long that the ending is too abrupt on all three of them.
Yeah, that was definitely a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, oh, and we're going to end it here, especially the third one. So the old dark house was Jimmy Olsen gets lured into the house for a surprise birthday party, cuts off his wife's head. It happens. Then there was A Night on the Town.
But what I loved about that is he's mid-swing, and he's like, oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit. But he can't stop himself because he put so much force into the swing. But he's got that face like, oh, fuck. I enjoyed that.
So what do they rent out the entire house? What is, I mean, the weakest of the three, I think, is this one.
The first story?
Yeah, second weakest ending, but the weakest, like, just setup of the three. Now, the second story, A Night on the Town, is teens versus dogs.
Right. Well, you know what's interesting? So before we get into that, the amount of recognizable people from just my 80s TV and movie watching, there's a lot of recognizable faces in here. Like the one girl that recommended to go to the club and then recommended to go to this other kind of warehouse thing. She was in Weird Science. The girl, the one that's driving, she was in Mr. Belvedere. And she is just as dumb in this as she was in Mr. Belvedere. It's like it's the same person. It's literally the same person.
What other film could you see the girl from Mr. Belvedere get ripped apart by dogs?
She's in the passenger seat and grabbing the wheel. It's like, let me do it. It's like, what are you gonna do? You're in the passenger seat. And then she gets out when they're in the car, they're safe in the car, and yeah, the dogs will probably be like jumping around, okay. But it just didn't make any sense how dumb they were. She's like, we have to leave. And of course, they're like, no, let's keep trying to start the car. So she gets out and runs and gets mauled by dogs.
Well, you're talking about so dumb that, oh, I'm not going to fill the car up with gas. It's so dumb that, okay, let's go into this abandoned gas station and see if we can use a phone. Then there's, oh, let's ask the nice rapist to let us go.
Who, by the way, that rapist guy is a guy from Pee Wee Herman, from Pee Wee's Big Adventure. He's like,
I thought I recognized him.
He's like, well, what are we going to do with him? And then he's like, you know, it's like, first, what does he say? First, we'll stab him. Then we'll hang him. Then we'll whatever. And then we'll kill him. He was that one of those guys. He was one of the bikers.
I'm glad he did something with his career.
Well, he's actually done other things, but he's always typecast as, like, you know, a crazy looking person.
I'm not saying anything negative. It's all good. So with this whole progression, is the four teenagers are out club hopping in, is it New York City, or do they don't specify?
I don't think they specify.
I always assume New York City when I see a city, because that's a real city.
I mean, it could be LA. It could be LA.
Exactly. It could be any city.
Yeah.
But they get lost in, like, the warehouse district. The car breaks down. They go to a gas station, try to get gas. Nobody there. No gas there. So they go into this dilapidated, abandoned building. And I love these films where the streets are, like, there's nobody there. Like, it's the middle of the city. There's somebody there somewhere. It's not this dead. Never this dead. The city is never dead. It's always alive.
Except right there. It's totally dead.
Yeah. Yeah, so they escape the rapist, but the rapist's dogs go after them, and then there's a cat and mouse game with the rapist, and during it, like you said, Mrs. Belvedere chick jumps out of the car and gets mauled. But it's not even that much mauling. They just kind of, like, drag her.
No, they didn't have the budget. They didn't have the budget for, you know, to have her kind of basically drawn and quartered by dogs.
At the end of the segment, when they blow up the warehouse with the dogs in it, so, you know, the happy ending is we cooked some dogs alive. I kept waiting for that Tracy to run up. It's like, why did you guys wait for me? They just bit me a little bit. I'm fine.
Yeah. Honestly, the way she was being bit at and all that you won't die from that.
Part of the problem is
a broken bone here or there, or you might get some tattered clothes and a couple of scrapes and cuts, but you don't die from what they did.
Part of the problem is that they didn't film the dogs and the teenagers together. They're all filmed separately.
Right, right.
Yeah, so there's no shots with them in the same screen together, because it's too dangerous. So that also, like, limits how well you can show them being mauled by the dogs.
Yeah. The budget wasn't there. They blew their wad on the end of the film, budget-wise. Kind of like what Street Trash did.
Saved up for the one big winner. Well, I mean, they had a bit more going for them with the third, or fourth, technically, if you count the wraparound, All-Night Operator.
Right.
Starring Marge Helgenberger.
Right, who went on to actually be probably the most famous person in this. Went on to be like a very cast.
She's a CIA.
She was. Yep. She was in
CSI.
CSI. And she went on to do, you know, a bunch of movies. CSI was real popular. And out of everyone in this, she's the only person in this movie that went on and actually became famous, like really famous.
She's the only one that really reacts to anything in this film. Nobody really reacts to anything.
Nobody
acts like they're actually reacting to a very scary or dangerous situation.
I mean, at this point in her career, she was 31 years old, and she was a true veteran. So she just brought all of that to the table.
Yeah, she doesn't do anything wrong in this segment. No points to pull. This segment's probably the most successful, but probably because it's the most ripped off.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that classic. The call is coming from inside the house story.
Yep. You know, when a stranger calls. Yeah.
I mean, it's the easiest one to explain. I mean, the setup is simple. All night call service girl is stalked by a crazy guy, who eventually kills everybody she talks to.
It was crazy. So when she first arrived, she went on like a skiing trip. Go ahead.
They're married. They're married, by the way, in real life.
What? One of the Wheat brothers?
No. Her and the stalker.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, that's what's his name? Something Rosenberg. Okay.
Yeah, Alan Rosenberg.
Alan Rosenberg. Oh, they were. Wow. He's still alive. Are they still married?
I don't know, but they were married at the time.
Oh, okay. Kind of like Chris Sarandon and Susan Sarandon. She kept his name, and she went on to be super famous.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Sarandon from Child's Play, and mm-hmm. Prince Humperdinck from Princess Bride. He was married to Susan Sarandon for a while.
Right.
So anyway, so that segment, yeah, it's they rip it off from, you know, When a Stranger Calls, and it's probably the most competent of all the short stories as well. It has some pretty good tension in it, I would say. And Marge Helenberger she's just a really good actress. So
it's the only one of the three that feels properly paced.
Yeah.
And it still feels like it ends too soon, but it does have the best ending out of all four.
It certainly does. You know what was interesting when that first opened up and she gets back from her vacation, she went on a skiing trip, breaks her ankle or breaks her foot, something like that. So she's sitting down with the one woman that started the call service, and she basically tells her, goes, I had to fire a bunch of people. It's just you and me, and you're on night shift, and I'm on day shift. And she's like, oh, man, no way. And she's like, you know, 10 years ago when I started this, this business was booming. And now it's car phones and beepers. And I'm like, oh, my God, car phones and beepers? Because just think about it. Just a mere, because this is 89, mm-hmm. just think about it. Just a mere another 10 years later, less than, actually, cell phones, you know, became a real big thing in like 96, 97, 98. Cell phones just took the rest away. Like pay phones, gone. You know, beepers, unless, you know, you're doing something shady. Beepers are gone.
They affected films too, because they had to come up with ways to avoid like cell phones and beepers and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I just thought that was interesting that she said that. Cell phones and beepers ruined my business. Ten years later, you know, or not cell phones, car phones and beepers ruined my business. And then 10 years later, it's cell phones ruined my business. So and now most people don't even have a landline in their house anymore.
True. That's correct. So during the telling of these three stories, The one asshole from the class that pissed himself when he had a gun pointed at him, that right. coward, he decides he's going to get back at the professor. So he sees everybody go into the professor's house, because everybody knows where the professor's house is, and he goes back at night. He brings his own axe and rope, because he plans ahead. And he ends up knocking the professor out in the basement, hanging him upside down from the ceiling, pouring a circle of lighter fluid around him and just like swinging him over the flames,
which he found in the professor's house. It was, they focused on it when he walked into the basement, that he saw the charcoal right. lighter fluid,
which means he didn't even plan the fire part. He just no, planned the exactly. hang him upside down and swing him.
And when I saw that yeah. part, I'm like, yeah, that's not going to come up later. Not at all.
Chekhov's lighter fluid.
That's it.
Yeah, so by the end of the last story, they all rush down, and during the interstitials, the professor keeps bugging Allison and says, "You have to tell us your story soon. You remember your story, don't you?" And she's saying, "Oh yeah, it was a dream I had." So bad turns to worse. Professor gets out of the swinging pendulum trap without even blinking. Takes an axe to the fucking frat boy, and then starts.
Well, no. First, he dares him to, you know, it's like, do it. You know, I'm not afraid. Do it. And then, of course, he swings at him and he misses because he can't do it. And then he takes the axe out of the stud in the wall and he says, "Well, I'm not afraid." And he starts chopping at him and killing him. Right. Then he catches fire. He's completely engulfed in flames, and he's still still chomping.
Nice fire
at him.
Trick.
It was pretty
nice
good.
Fire trick.
Pretty good. Yeah. Old school. You know,
yeah, the sweater on, so that kind of cheating.
But well, yeah, those things anyway. Go up real quick.
Yeah.
What is this, wool?
But then the professor, the fire engulfs all the other friends except her and Allison and her friend from the beginning of the film, when that talked her into taking the class, she tries to save her, but she's sucked in by some kind of weird heat vortex. Yeah,
when I saw that, I'm like, is there like a supernatural thing going on now? You know? Oh, and that girl there, she was in Grease 2. She was a little kid in Grease 2, but she actually went on to have a real career as well. She was like in the Louis C.K. TV show on HBO. I think it was just called Louis. Mm-hmm. And then she made appearances on his other show. She's been in a bunch of movies. So it wasn't just Hellenberger. It's her as well, the one that got sucked into the vortex. But she actually went on to do a bunch of things too, now that I think about it. But yeah, it was a weird scene where she's like holding her hand and she's just like, mm-hmm. like, I don't know what that was, but yeah. She's definitely getting sucked into the room with all the fire. And I was like, is this like a Jason Part 7 thing where the girl has telekinetic powers and this girl doesn't know she has it. And her vision like is pushing this girl into like this vortex of fire. I'm like, I didn't know what they were trying to do that scene.
Pushing her. She was trying to save her. How would she be pushing her into the vortex?
Not pushing her, but no, I didn't say
never mind. I didn't say pushing her.
I was saying.
You said pushing her, but I forgot I asked.
Did I say pushing her?
It doesn't matter.
Well, I might have meant pulling her. If I said pushing, I meant pulling. I don't think I said pushing, but.
So because of the weird heat vortex, Allison is the only survivor of the fire. And as she climbs out of the basement, the flaming skeleton or the burnt skeleton of the professor with the axe proceeds to chase her through the previous three stories.
Yes. And it starts off with the
dogs.
The dog one, which is interesting because they did it out of order. But then she ends up in the house from the first one. And then she ends up in the high rise or the building that has the call center,
right?
So,
and then at the very end of the chase, he puts the gun to her head. He's like, "Oh my God, do I scare you now?"
And he's not a skeleton anymore at that point. He's in regular form,
right? And then he pulls the trigger. Everything goes white, and
wakes up from a dream.
It was all a dream. And the film is circular. It ends with her sitting in the same park bench as the beginning of the film and her friends saying, "Hey, let's go to class. What's your problem?"
Yeah, which is how the movie started. So it bookends.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So it's a cyclical. Now, when I watched it, I wrote down at the time, I was like, I wonder if I would have thought this all a dream thing was original back in 89. But then I went back and watched Dead of Night after I read that was inspired by it. So I'll just to tell you the parts, none of the short story parts, the stories that they tell are the same. But what is very similar is the setup of Dead of Night is a contractor is invited, wakes up from a dream, is invited to the week. No, it doesn't start with the dream. It starts with him being invited to the shed cottage. He's invited to a cottage for the weekend to give an estimate, and when he gets there, suddenly he realizes that everybody there is in a recurring dream he keeps having, and so they all start conversation, and that's what gets them telling stories about weird things that have happened to them in the past. And then at the end, he ends up running through all the backstories, and then he wakes up and it's a dream again.
Oh, okay.
So the whole wraparound concept is from the original Dead of Night. That's why I think of this film more as a remake than of an homage, because they pretty much ripped off they didn't steal any material other than like that, but it's still enough for me to call it a remake.
And that came out in 1946?
1946, correct.
Wow, I mean that's
it's one of the few horror films that come out around that time period.
Yeah, I know that they were doing things like Dracula, and they were doing Frankenstein, so there was a market for it. But I'm actually just surprised that an anthology. It was an anthology, right?
Yes,
it was an anthology. Oh, okay.
Yes, but all the people at the cottage were telling stories, and every time they would tell a story, they'd go back and he'd be like, "Oh, but I knew this was going to happen." And they're all trying to prove the psychiatrist there that he could actually be right, and it could actually be a dream that he had. So it works better. It works much better. It's not as slow as this. And by having five or six short stories instead of just three, I think it was five, they're shorter and tighter. They get more to the point. And so they were able to have one or two that are humorous or aren't exactly scary. It was more just about weird things happening to people. I think it's why it's considered one of the best or one of the original anthology horrors.
I'm gonna have to grab that. I'll throw this in my movie collection too, because I didn't hate it.
I would think
that somebody that likes 80s cinema, horror, thriller, and whatnot might enjoy this. I mean,
you know who did hate After Midnight?
Holly.
Holly did not like After Midnight. She said, not good, Scott. Not good. She was also confused by the vortex, as was I. She said, what's sucking her up into, what is doing that? She said, I don't know.
I don't know. Something's happening.
Yeah. At least I didn't make my parents watch this one.
Maybe your parents would have liked this.
No, wait, I did watch. Did I make my parents watch this one? I forget. Never mind. It's all blurred out.
It's only been a week.
Yeah, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah. So as far as rating this classic 80s horror anthology, it's currently 5.4 on IMDb.
Five.
5.4. I thought I said that. Sorry.
No. I'm saying we should rate it a 5.
Oh, Yeah.
I mean, six puts it in the "this is pretty good and it has flaws" category. You know,
six means there was something interesting about it.
Yeah, six means exactly. Six means like, you know what, this was actually pretty good. It has its flaws, but I've actually enjoyed this. This is not that.
No. Yeah. Every time you come close to enjoying it, it's like, oh no, we have to cut back to slowness again.
Yeah,
it's constantly. It's equating just time with tension, and except for the third one, they don't pull it off.
Yeah, this is a solid 5. This is an average, you know, horror thriller film.
Competent, but not satisfying.
Correct, and a 5 is really where it should be. So the rating on IMDb is actually pretty accurate. I always say if we could do half points, I would probably maybe, like, this would be one of those where I'd be like, okay, I'll give this a 5.5.
No.
You know?
No, 5. No, so, 5.
But, yeah, 5. Definitely a 5.
Yeah, my reaction to the film, meh.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, there are way better 80s horror films to spend your time watching. This is definitely this
yeah.
could have been.
Well, this when did could this have been come on, out? When did it come out? Did it come out for Halloween? I'm gonna find out.
Okay.
I'm gonna just look super quick. Oh, it came. Okay. Do you remember when we first started doing the show and we were doing the top 10 and we were also doing, like the releases for the year, and sometimes we would do just January, sometimes we would do summer blockbuster, but then we would do, let's say we did a horror film and it came out after Halloween, and it would always be because, well, there's a lot of horror movies coming out and there's just too much overlap. This came out in November. It came out after Halloween. It came out 4 days after Halloween. Or 3 days after Halloween, came out on November 3rd. So this is one of those movies where they just could not cram it in. They couldn't cram it in.
They had no reason to. There was nothing to cram in there.
I wonder what, you know what? Just because now I need to know, and I think everyone else does too, what other movies came out in October of 1989?
Up against After Midnight, or before After Midnight.
Like, just right before. Oh, Shocker. Wes Craven's Shocker was out the weekend before. Kill Me Again.
A much better film.
Yeah, Kill Me Again. Much, much better film. And Halloween 5 came out earlier in the month as well.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean, you got a franchise. I guess they were, yeah, they weren't confident against going up West, against Wes Craven or that, so.
Those are the only horror films in October. I'm surprised.
Hmm. Also, don't forget, this is back when they were cracking down on horror films, too.
Yeah.
Late 80s.
There was more comedies and dramas. Mm. Like, they were
breaking they had to get away from the gore.
Yeah, Breaking In, Crimes and Misdemeanors, and The Fabulous Baker Boys. Fabulous Baker Boys is listed as comedy?
I know this film's rated R, but I think you could show this on TV with minimal cuts. Oh. Maybe the severed head. The severed head. You'd have to get rid of the severed head. Other than the severed head,
honestly,
there's like no gore in this film.
It depends on what time of day. You could probably show this thing completely uncut. Is there even an F-bomb in this?
I don't think so.
Now that I think, really think, I don't even think there's an F-bomb in this.
It's very tame by any standards. It's very mild by any standard.
And I will say this, even with the decapitated head, it's so comical. I would even say this could be just a PG-13.
Yeah, there's no gushing blood.
There's no nudity. Even later on when she sees the head roll in the room and it's just laying there and it's just old special effects. This is a PG-13. Like, I could show both of my kids this movie and not be worried one bit.
Yeah, right?
For real. Even when he's hacking at him when he's on fire, it's like... When the dogs attack the Mr. Belvedere girl, it's
no blood.
Just... There's no blood. They're just ripping at her clothes. There's no screaming or yelling. She's just limp, you know?
She just immediately goes limp.
I thought she was just kind of faking it just to see if they would stop.
That's why I thought she'd run up at the end, because, like, there's no way she's dead. I mean, what did they do to her? I don't even... Jesus.
So, yeah, no,
They're support dogs. They're just trying to help. And they burned them alive, the poor bastards. The
poor dogs. Yeah, so this is a very, very soft, R.
Yeah.
You know? Even when they tell the stories and they come out of the story, everyone... It's just like, oh my God, that was so scary. Did that really happen? It's like, what kind of baby are you?
Yeah.
Like, I've read Goosebumps stories that were scarier. That's for
kids. If that scares you, you shouldn't be going to a professor's house at night.
Yeah, right? And Jeez. He even told them, you're not getting extra credit for this. Well, why the fuck am I going to your house?
That's what they say right before they grab you.
Yeah.
This is all gratis.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah, but not a, as Holly said, not a good film, Scott.
Well, she knows what we do, right?
Yeah. Oh no, she knows. She knows.
I know.
I'm joking. Believe me, she knows.
I'm joking.
So we're not spinning the wheel this week because we know next week we're reviewing for episode 444.
The Roger Corman Fantastic Four film that came out in 1994.
Not come out in 1990.
No, it did not. Out. Well, actually, I believe it was released theatrically on one screen one night.
No, it shouldn't have been.
I thought it was. Wrong. No, I thought it was. Thought I'd look that up.
Ow. I still have some research to do because my memory's a bit hazy on everything going on behind it. So I will be doing a bit of research before we review.
Here, let's see. May 31st, 1994. It's listed as, in parentheses, only known showing. So I guess it was it had a showing somewhere. It was cataloged as having it. Somebody somewhere saw this thing in a theater, and it was probably to a very small crowd, maybe. Who knows how many people were there, but it says May 31st, 1994, it literally says only known showing.
Now, here's the typical problem we have with reviewing a film like this, because technically you can't get it.
No, this thing is bootlegged everywhere. You can watch it on YouTube. The whole thing is on there.
And the copy you can get is not good.
No, this thing's been, it's
yeah
been bootlegged so however, many times.
However, I have a feeling with the release of this new film, at some point they're going to release it anyway because it's available. I mean, like, it is out there. If you know how to look for films,
yeah, because
it's out there.
This is finally, it's finally being done by Disney Studios and officially in the MCU, whereas yeah. all the previous incarnations of this were 20th Century Fox and the,
oh, well,
the
you know
Corman
what?
Thing.
We should stop right now and save that for next week. I'm sorry.
That's you're right.
But
you're right.
But yeah, that's it for After Midnight.
but it is the worst one. the Roger Corman Fantastic Four. It is the worst one.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We know that.
It was hands
yeah.
down, hands down. I'm gonna make yeah. Mare watch that yeah. one with me. I think I have to.
I already made Holly watch it. I'm probably gonna watch it again.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I gotta catch up with myself. With my bad self. But oh, yes, yeah, yes. Man. Thank you. Thank you for listening, watching whatever media format you're choosing. Yeah, thanks for being with
like,
us.
However you like to do this. Anyhow, as Scott was saying, this is episode 443 of Movie Sucktastic. As always, we thank you for joining. You can go to our website at moviesucktastic.com. You can download all the shows there. You can listen to the shows right on the website, or you can click on the YouTube link and watch this episode that we just did just now on YouTube, which is always fun. Or you can tune in live with us every single week. We go live every single Thursday, or we try to, and every week we review something different, and we're always taking requests. Which brings me to, you can go to iTunes and you can listen to the show there as well. But if we take requests, you can go to our website and you can fill out the form and you can tell us what you want us to review. We'll probably do it. If we haven't done it, we're always looking for that.
If we don't do it right away, it'll go on the wheel.
It'll go on the wheel. It'll at least go on the wheel. Or it might be on the wheel already. You never know. So.
Oh, yeah.
So you can do that. You can go to the website and you can do that. You can also, you can leave us voicemail at 908-514-4470. If there's voicemail, we'll play it. You can leave us email at themovieguys@moviesucktastic.com. If you leave us email, we will read it. I always notice that we get a lot of people listening to the show and watching on YouTube. We do get quite a few people. I'm always surprised at who was doing that, but we don't get a lot of voicemail or email because I think today's day and age, people just like to listen and then move on to the next week and move on to something else. And I get that. I totally get that. I basically
as long as you're
do the
enjoying
same
the conversation.
Thing. But if you do want to reach out to us, that is the way to do it. We will read or play whatever you send us. And we also have an app. You can go to moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk. Download it. It works, kind of. The part that plays the episodes works perfect. The other parts, they don't work so good. But it still kind of works. But honestly, until we design a brand new one, which who knows when that is, just download your favorite podcast player and do a search for Movie Sucktastic. It's in there. Everything is in there. And you can go to facebook.com/moviesucktastic. Everything we post goes there. Do you have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
Go ahead. Scare me.
Been asking you for words of wisdom. It seems like you now you figured it out. Like when I started asking.
I knew what I was going to say from the beginning. Leave me alone.
No. You misheard what I just said. Just saying, I've been asking you for words of wisdom for years, and I think you narrowed down like what episode the first time I ever did it was. I don't know.
Yeah, I forgot now.
I was just being nostalgic. Anyway. All right, we will talk to you next week when we do Fantastic Four. Ooh, music fade out. Perfect.
Roger Corman style.